This is Audible.
The Addiction Formula, a holistic approach to writing captivating, memorable hit songs. This is the author, Friedemann Findeisen. Introduction. 2 years later. October 29, 2015, around 11:30 p.m. in Enschede, the Netherlands. If life really flashes in front of your eyes before you die, this must be what it feels like. I'm sitting in a tiny student apartment, my face lit by the bluish shine of a MacBook, heartbeat thumping against my eardrums, and fingers hovering over the mousepad. I'm seconds away from releasing the paperback version of the Addiction Formula, the very first product for holistic songwriting, when the thoughts flood in. Have I thought of everything? What if I open up the book tomorrow and find a really obvious spelling error? What if a footnote is in the wrong place and people get confused? For that matter, what if no one understands this book? What if I suck as a teacher? What if no one ever reads it and I just wasted a whole year writing it? What if too many people read it? Am I ready for a big change like that in my life? Can I deal with fans, haters, critics, and skeptics? If I hadn't announced the release date of the Addiction Formula on my Facebook page, I could just give in to the pressure and go see that new Maze Runner movie instead. But I did post that release date. And my huge number of followers will both be hugely disappointed if I don't release now. Or will they? Maybe, probably, they don't even care. Maybe Facebook's algorithm won't even show them the post. Ah, but then they'll start wondering and just go to the Facebook page themselves. Or maybe not. Probably not. Actually, most definitely not. But it'll be okay. The Facebook ads will help. I just need that critical mass of people to read it, and then they will tell their friends, and next thing you know, I'm on Oprah. Except, I don't want to be on Oprah. I'd rather live a humble, quiet life as a man behind the curtains. Isn't this why I became a songwriter in the first place? So why did I write this book? I'm basically creating my own competition here. Because after all, isn't this world just a shitty place where everyone simply takes what they can get? Why else would we have hunger, poverty, and wars? And here I am, standing in the middle of the battleground, waving a copy of the Addiction Formula with a stupid smile on my face. This is bullshit. What am I doing here? But then again, maybe this is the beginning of something big. Maybe this is my way of making this world a better place. Just click and think about it later. My finger pushes a little too hard on the mouse pad, and a thank you message flashes across the screen. Your book is now public. I hit another button and the Facebook ads campaign goes live too. And I'm done. Months of work leading up to this. Now it's in the hands of Flying Spaghetti Monster or whatever's up there. The scariest part is, for the first time in my life, I don't know what's going to happen next. If I was American, I would probably skip forward 2 years now to tell you that the Addiction Formula went on to become a number one bestseller and that it's being used in conservatories all over the world to teach commercial songwriting. But in reality, it took over 1.5 years before it got to that point, and it happened all at once, not step by step. What no one tells you in school or marketing books, especially American marketing books, is that the world is unpredictable. All your skill, your marketing, your investments, your time, I often felt as if no one cared about that. In its first month, despite heavy advertising and my best efforts at making engaging YouTube videos, the Addiction Formula sold 10 copies. I'm not gonna lie, that was tough. Next to my work as a musician, all of my time went into holistic songwriting, and still, my income kept decreasing. Now whenever I see a book proudly exclaiming that I should cash in on my passion, I put it back in the fantasy aisle where it belongs. Does that mean you shouldn't be passionate about songwriting? Of course not. But at the end of the day, passion doesn't put food on your table. So why are you hearing my voice right now? Because as 2016 came to a close, I had a few realizations that did end up putting that precious schnitzel in my belly. And since you might be thinking about making a living off of music as well, I thought I'd share them in this book, kind of like a nostalgic review of the time since holistic songwriting went public. And while I'm certainly in no position to tell you how to live your life, these have been my experiences, and thusly, it's how I've chosen to live mine. Number one, it's not about you. It's not about showing people what you can do. It's not about making money. It's not even about being passionate about your job. It's about them, the people that read or hear your work. Make them feel special for finding you. Listen to their problems and help them. When you buy a CD, are you doing it because you want to help the artist make a living, or are you doing it for selfish reasons? Most people buy something because they think it's going to help them in some way, emotionally, socially, or financially. So make something that gives every single one of your listeners a completely unique and personal experience. Understand that it's not your listeners. It's Neil from the UK, Ryan from the States, Diego from Chile, and Aditya from India. You are communicating with real people. Treat them with respect, and they will gladly return the favor. Speaking of which, some people won't like you. The first comment I ever got on YouTube told me to stop making videos altogether, in about 1,000 words and with more profanities, naturally. That's never fun, especially when they're right. I used to write back overly friendly emails to get them back on my side, and honestly, sometimes that did work. But of course, the right thing to do is to not answer them. Your time is precious, and you should be spending it in the places where you can help. Your fans, not your haters. Make the people that like you love you, and forget about everyone else. A real fan will recommend you, and that's how you want to grow. Number two, the world changes when you're willing to give. I'm aware this sounds like a line from a marriage counselor, but man, this is probably the most important insight I've ever had in my life. In this capitalist part of the world that's driven by optimization and competition, the rarest good has become altruism. Giving for the sake of giving. I could tell you that they're also more likely to buy your stuff or do something for you in return, but what really hit me hard was how people change when you're being generous. When Austin Wintory, composer of the video game Journey, found all of his music was being openly shared on YouTube, back then a direct copyright violation, he commented under the video to thank the uploaders for caring enough about his music to upload it. A few comments and likes later, can you believe it? This guy's actually cool. Journey became the first score to a video game to climb the top 10 iTunes charts around the world. Think about what kind of world you want your fans to live in. Do you want them to see you as a business? Then stop treating your fans as customers and begin seeing them as people. And I know that's easy to forget when your life depends on selling your music. But never forget why you became a songwriter in the first place. To create a connection. Number three. Marketing is not selling your products. I understand if you're turned off by the idea of marketing your music or yourself. So if that is a problem you're running into, maybe this definition will change your mind. Marketing is connecting a problem with a solution. In my world, that means make absolutely clear who a course is for and who will be disappointed. In songwriting, it means have a clear message with your songs and your image. When someone sees your album cover or the first few seconds of your music video, they should be able to tell whether they will like your music or not. Communicate clearly who you are with everything you do. That includes how you dress, what you say in interviews, how you light your videos, and what colors to use in your logo. The more clearly you position yourself, the better. Oh no, is he still talking? Yep, sorry. But before we begin with the actual book, a few words on what you can expect. In The Addiction Formula, you will learn about three tools. Hype, tension, and applied tension that you can use to make your songs more attractive to your listeners. A lot of what you're going to hear will not be new. Rather, my attempt has been to organize what you already know. But once you come out of this personalized experience, to use a term from earlier, I think you'll write songs a lot more effortlessly. The techniques in this book have not aged in the past 2 years. I'm seeing even more implied tension now than I did then. There's a whole bunch of new techniques being used, all of which are in this updated version, but the principles behind the addiction formula are the same. Throughout this audiobook, I will use examples from pop songs of the past 30 years. Since you're probably listening to this in your car, bathtub, or while climbing Mount Everest, I thought it best to put up a website with all of the examples for you to enjoy at a later date. This website is holisticsongwriting.com/addiction audio. On here, you will also find all graphs from the book. Why make an audiobook if the concept is primarily visual? The good news is that this medium allows us to listen to pieces of music together that were composed specifically for this purpose. And if you want to listen to how the hit songs do it, the website also includes a Spotify playlist with tons of examples. Thanks to one of my readers, Bert Callens, for making this list. And while I'm thanking people involved with this project, I'd also like to give a big shout out to the director of this audiobook, Linnea, who also got in touch with me after reading the book. She's the reason you're hearing this now. Last but not least, I'd like to thank every single one of the people that have supported Holistic Songwriting in these 2 years. That includes you. Thank you for the thousands of emails, for offering your help, for making me believe that all is not lost and that there's still a world out there that doesn't make it to the news, that's filled with smart, compassionate people that coincidentally also love writing songs. If you only have 4 minutes, a quick summary of this book. The Addiction Formula is designed to captivate your audience and make your songs memorable and unique. To accomplish this, it borrows psychological principles from addiction, as in drug abuse, binge-watching Lost, or eating Twinkies. The most important element to this is structure. How many big moments does your song have? How big are they? And when do they occur? How do you lead up to them? And what happens between them? Once you have a good idea of what your structure looks like, all the other elements of your song, such as chords, rhythm, arrangement, part writing, lyrics, and production follow suit. For example, if you want a chorus to sound big, you can achieve that with chords, such as playing wider voicings, or rhythm, like a higher subdivision. You could also use arrangement by adding a new instrument, melody by putting the singer in a top range, lyrics by talking about something universal, or production by thickening the overall sound. In the addiction formula, we use energy curves to represent our structure. It plots the different sections of the song against their energy levels. In many pop songs, this curve starts low and reaches its first peak in the chorus, then drops down for the second verse, only to hit another high on the second chorus. The bridge's energy is often somewhere between the verses and the chorus, and the last chorus usually becomes the highest peak of energy. Again, for a visual representation of this curve, check holisticsongwriting.com/addiction audio. But I think you can imagine it. This structure, verse, chorus, bridge, chorus, is the most famous structure in the world. And if you haven't used it yourself yet, you have definitely heard it on the radio. For the younger listeners, the radio is like a toaster with Spotify on it, except that the audio quality is not as good and you can't choose what you want to hear next. Also, it doesn't make toast, which is probably one of the many reasons why it became extinct after a giant meteor hit the Earth. In part one of this book, we'll go into why certain structures work better than others and how they trigger parts of our brain when we hear them. This stuff is gold if you want to learn how to captivate your audience at the most basic level. And if that's not enough for you, I'll even teach you 4 simple steps to create your own unique energy curves. If part one is the framework, part two is the practice. These chapters are all about translating your curve to music. So we will go into detail as to how you can increase or decrease the energy and how to build up to a certain moment. This part of the book is similar to an encyclopedia with lists of techniques you can use in any song. Part three is about putting all that you have learned together. Here we will go through the 10 steps of the addiction formula and see where we can go from there. We will also do something that no other songwriting book has ever done before. Give you the tools to create your own techniques. This might be the most valuable part of this book if you are seeking to sound more unique and stand out from the crowd. Naturally, I don't expect you to believe a single word I say without proof, so every technique or idea in this book comes with examples from the Billboard charts of the past 30 years. We are talking modern songwriting here. No examples that are older than that allowed. Do you need to know music theory? While some theory knowledge can help you with this book, it isn't all that necessary. We are writing for non-musicians, not for music teachers or musicologists. You will notice upon flicking through this book that I don't use notation or any other conventional way of describing music. Am I saying music theory is outdated? No. But there are plenty of hit songwriters out there who can treat music, and in order to understand the addiction formula, you don't need to either. If you've reached the top of Mount Everest by now and don't intend to listen any further, then I hope you at least got something out of this quick summary, and congratulations, of course. If, however, you want to dive in deep and learn all about the nuances that make this approach work, keep listening, because we're about to dive deep into the addiction formula. Preface. Story is dead. Long live story. As far as I'm concerned, storytelling in music is about over. Yes, it still pops up every now and then in some country songs or your latest folk hit, but overall, songwriters are moving away from telling fully fleshed out stories through their songs. This in turn means one very important aspect of songwriting just falls by the wayside: dramaturgy. What storytelling did for centuries, going all the way back to bards, is provide a reason for listening to the whole song. If you want to know what happens to Georgie in Rob Stewart's The Killing of Georgie, you have to keep listening. Every songwriter knows, give the audience a good story, and they'll stick around. Now consider Sam Smith's Stay With Me, Katy Perry's I Kissed a Girl, Rihanna's Umbrella, or Jennifer Lopez's Booty. Are these songs big storytellers? Do you stick around because you want to know more about J-Lo's butt? Okay, bad example. But does your life depend on finding out what Katy Perry has to say in verse 2? No. These songs, as 95% of all the songs on the radio today, describe moments, emotions, things. Story is dead. Or is it? With this book, I present to you an approach to songwriting that is all about telling a captivating story, without actually telling a story. In fact, each song named above does tell a story the addictive way and could have been written using the approach. I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel here. Our goal is to write compelling, commercial tracks that fit into the radio format. But as you'll see, the addiction formula can help you get there much, much faster and with laser precision, over and over again. And best of all, it's so deviously simple, you can learn it in 4 hours. How to learn the addiction formula on making this book your bitch. If listening to this audiobook gives you an idea of any kind, whether related to what I've written or not, write it down immediately. These insights are way more valuable than anything I could ever teach you. So create a new doc in your smartphone and keep it close by. Secondly, I urge you to check out the musical examples. I will play some of my own compositions for you here and there, but there's nothing like hearing a technique you just learned in an actual hit song. I put a lot of time and effort into finding examples that show different sides of the same technique, so I recommend listening to all of them, even if you get it the first time. Thirdly, if you haven't already, check out holisticsongwriting.com. Download the free resources and read one of the many blogs. Check out the podcast and definitely take a look at the artist series on the YouTube channel. It's probably how you heard about this book in the first place, but if you haven't and you're interested in how the biggest artists in the world write music and market themselves, this is where it's at. Disclaimer. We are primarily concerned with commercial music in this book. If this contradicts your artistic integrity, let me say a few words because I used to think very much like you. If you want to make music that is completely free from conventions, pop music is not the place for you. Pop relies heavily on an element of recognition to help you relate quicker to a new song. Some songs are more obvious about it, using similar melodies, grooves, or sounds as other hits, while others are more sophisticated with it. That's just how it is. However, the pop rules that do exist still allow you to be immensely creative and original. Think of the top 200 as a party that you can only go to if you dress up in a smoking. Does that change your personality or who you are? Of course not. So what about artistic integrity? Too many times I have found this term to just mean ego. If you are not willing to play by any rules, don't be surprised if you are not invited to the party. But stay with me. I think once you learn what the rules are, you will realize that they can be used with good intentions, meaning musically. And we all agree that there should never be musical compromise in favor of commercialism. Part 1. Energy Curves. In this part, you will learn what the addiction formula can do for your songs, what an enticing curve looks like, and how to create one yourself. Holistic songwriting. The interdependency problem. If you've ever tried to teach someone anything about songwriting, you might have realized how hard it is to teach anything if you have to keep all possibilities in mind. For example, if you tell your student that a chorus needs to be big, he might correctly argue that the chorus of System of a Down's Chop Suey was in fact the smallest part of the song. The difficulty is that every element in a song is interdependent of its surroundings. Examining one element at a time is like studying an organ in the human body. Take it out of its context, and it will stop working. And this marks the big problem with songwriting. There's so much stuff to keep in mind. A song needs to have great melody, harmony, rhythm, lyrics, production, arrangement, feeling, needs to be captivating, memorable, and all of that in 3.5 minutes. Every single one of these elements is interdependent of one another. Change one, and the rest has to follow suit. This typically leads to a very inefficient writing process. Let's check it out, see if you recognize this from somewhere. Friedemann Findeisen presents 10 Overly Complicated Steps to Writing a Convoluted Song. Step 1. Start out with one element. Let's say harmony. Step 2. Somehow add a melody that goes with those chords. Step 3. Struggle finding lyrics that fit both your melody and harmony. Step 4. Find parts for the other instruments that fit everything you have so far. Step 5. Do all of that again for the rest of your song. Step 6. Try to find musicians that go well with the song and record them. Step 7. Attempt to make all your different ideas in your song fit together through production, and fail miserably. Step 8. Put song on SoundCloud. Step 9. Be disappointed when no one listens to it. Step 10. Die alone and without anyone ever hearing your song. Your cats don't count. There are two possible problems with this approach. Either your song sounds like a patchwork of very different sections pasted together, or it all sounds the same if you were too scared to deviate too far from your initial idea. So your song will either weird out your audience or bore the crap out of them. These options aren't great, and yet 99% of the songs I hear at conservatories and amongst to-be professionals suffer from this. The next step for a songwriter is keeping a structure in mind when writing. You may know after you've written your first section that you've written a chorus and that you need to structure the rest of your song around it. That's a big step in the right direction. You're starting to see the forest over the trees. However, you're still moving from one element of your song to the next. You still start out with one element and adjust all the following elements to the previous ones. This can only lead to complications because, like a kid's birthday party, the more you add, the quicker you lose control. Most people know this problem from writing an entire song and then slapping on some lyrics. This rarely works out because they need to work with so many existing elements now. The melody, the rhythm of the melody, the mood of the song, the structure, the arrangement, etc. I'm sure you have been in this situation before, and you know it's as pleasant as having your tonsils removed. Imagine working for Mercedes as a manufacturer and having to adjust to what everyone else is doing all the time. Sally from marketing comes in and tells you the motor needs to be bigger because it will sell better. 5 minutes later, Ron, the engineer, tells you it needs to be smaller to fit into the car. This obviously is a terrible way of running a company with everyone talking to everyone. Yet, this is how most songwriters write their songs. Every new element, be it lyrics, melody, or instruments, needs to fit into what's already there, even if they are asking for entirely different things. Maybe you've written a fantastic melody, but your lyrics just won't fit its rhythm. Or you have some great chord progressions, but can't find the right arrangement for them. So what do? You compromise. You write a nonsensical line in favor of your melody, or revert the chords to a standard power progression. Isn't that a shame? Let's get back to Mercedes. Maybe you've already figured out that what really would help this company is someone in charge. someone who makes the decisions for everyone. Someone with a vision and a plan. This changes things. You now know exactly what it is you need to build. You just ask your boss. If the two co-workers come over to tell you conflicting things, you let your boss settle the discussion. The same goes for songwriting. There needs to be a boss, a governing principle that guides our writing process. This way, we don't need to cross-check everything new we write with what we already have. We just consult our boss, our approach. This book is about such an approach, which again is a governing principle you can use to write more coherent songs. It is not a technique or element. Instead, it manages all the elements of your song. This way, you're taking a holistic view of the whole writing process, where you understand how the different elements work together instead of working on one element at a time. Congratulations, you've just been promoted from mediator to manager. Now, what would be a great governing principle for your songs? What is important no matter which genre or style you write in? That's what we'll get to in the next chapter. You got to sound gefährlich. How to captivate an audience. When I was studying jazz guitar in Germany, I had a teacher called Florian Endele. Imagine Matt Damon wearing a pair of Groucho glasses. That's Florian. Florian was, and still is, my favorite teacher because of his little anecdotes that he would share with us from time to time. One such an anecdote was about his guitar teacher, who had taught him a very valuable lesson. You got to sound gefährlich. Florian's teacher was American and had somehow picked up this German word from him. Gefährlich means dangerous, so the phrase translates to, you got to sound dangerous. This simple advice has completely changed the way I think about composition, and it is a major component of the addiction formula. But what does it mean? It means you want your audience to feel endangered. You want to grab them by the throat with your music and create a compelling universe that pulls them in and is very hard to leave. This is the key to good songwriting for me, and it is the ultimate goal of the addiction formula. Creating a fascinating and memorable experience with your songs that keeps your audience hooked from start to finish. Of course, you want to do this in such a way that they don't notice it. No big swooshes or explosions necessary. In fact, even the sweetest little folk song about your neighbor's cacti can sound gefährlich. This is because the addiction formula is merely acting in the background. It is only audible for the initiated, but it is there, managing all the different elements of the song. Once you are aware of it, you will start hearing it in virtually any hit song out there. This is the power of the formula. It has an enormous impact on an audience, while at the same time being so subtle that it's only noticeable to the initiated. So while anyone knows that a hit song needs a catchy hook and a special sum-sum that makes you want to dance, the vast majority of listeners have no idea that there is another level of attraction in songwriting. So how does it work? Well, what has enslaved you in the past? Maybe it was the TV series Lost, which you binge-watched in a week. Or you read a book and you just couldn't put it down. Maybe a video game or funny cat videos. Even if it's a more serious addiction, like alcohol or drugs, what do all of these have in common? What makes them so enticing? It's the principle of gratification and anticipation. You get something, a big revelation in Lost, a kiss in a book, a new area in your game, an especially funny cat video, a high from taking drugs, which gets you into it, gratification, and then you wait for it to happen again, anticipation. So you push through the boring episodes, read pages of long, boring descriptions in your book, keep dying over and over again during a difficult section in your game, spend hours clicking through unfunny cat videos, and deal with withdrawal symptoms. This seems like a terrible to-do list for a day, and yet we do stuff like this all the time. The prospect of getting something is just too great to stop, even if the process is tedious. Secondly, the most addictive things in the world have a way of forcing you into coming back. Movies, books, and TV series use cliffhangers to create unbearable tension that can only be resolved by gratification. The longer you stay off of cigarettes, the more you will physically feel it. The only way to stop the feeling is to smoke. Gold diggers keep digging because in their mind, their chances of finding gold go up the deeper they get. This is all really fascinating stuff because the psychological principles that form the basis of all these addictions can also be used to make a listener grow addicted to your songs. Imagine a song that subconsciously makes you want to listen. A song that hooks you, takes you to another place, and keeps you there. A song you want to play on repeat all day. This is the kind of song we want to write with this book. We are not so much interested in hooks, groove, or lyrics, but rather how to arrange them so they have the most impact. So if we want to utilize this concept of anticipation and gratification for songwriting, there are three things we need to accomplish. 1. Make the gratification parts increasingly satisfying to hook the audience and keep them coming back. These will typically be our choruses. 2. Keep the periods of anticipation, or verses, interesting enough so we don't bore our audiences. And 3. Find the perfect moments to switch between anticipation and gratification. If too much time passes, people will get bored and zone out, switch too quickly, and they will get confused. Lucky for us, these points have been well researched for over hundreds of years in the art of storytelling. A great story distributes its big moments well throughout its duration. Fact is, there's nothing more enticing than a good story. Marketers, those people that really know how to get inside your head, use them all the time. Instead of telling you how great their product is, they start telling you a story. Once you start it, you cannot go back. Be honest, would you watch every single episode of Breaking Bad and then stop right before the last episode? Of course not. The Harry Potter book series wouldn't have been as successful as it was if people didn't want to know how the story continues, which really means they want their moments of gratification. The first kiss, succeeding at school, triumphing over evil. The rest is merely anticipation. It only makes sense to use the principles that make a great story work and use them to write more captivating songs. Be aware that this is not just another book on writing more story-driven lyrics. Who really does that outside of country and folk anyway? Yes, we will get to that, but for the most part, I want to talk about how you can tell a story just with your music. You can use this approach even if you only write instrumental tracks. This is why I refer to this idea as lyricless storytelling, even if lyrics can also be used for this purpose. Our story then acts as a governing principle that is woven throughout every element of the song. Note, lyricless storytelling is really only one of three factors that make a hit song, the others being hook and groove. However, it is the most logical of the three and therefore the easiest to learn. And even more importantly, learning this approach will give you a huge advantage in the business because no one knows about it. Trust me on this one. Everyone knows about hook and groove. My dentist can tell you that. It doesn't take a lot to figure this out, and it only takes a little luck to write a good hook or groove. I'm sure that you have already written a couple that could be a huge hit. The hard truth is that they are worthless if they're not presented right. With this book, I want to teach you how to place and introduce your hooks and grooves correctly, so you get the most out of them and write songs that truly connect with people. So here's an overview about the things you're going to learn in the following chapters of this book. First, we will look at how gratification and anticipation translate to music in order to really understand how we can practically force our audience to listen to us. We will go into great detail how to design an energy curve for your songs, which is a fantastic visual way of expressing the gratification-anticipation interplay. The question we will be asking in this part will be, what is our story? In part two of this book, we will then go through each element of a song, such as arrangement, chords, production, etc., and see how we can adapt them to our given energy curve. That means techniques, techniques, techniques. So we are concerned with how to tell our story. And finally, in part three, we will start with a chapter on creating your own techniques. And as far as I know, this is the only songwriting book in the world that does that, followed by a 10-step guide to writing a song with the addiction formula. The question is, how do we go from telling stories to becoming a storyteller? I am aware that you will probably want to skip over to part two immediately. Don't. This audiobook follows a certain syntax, which is designed to get you from where you are to mastery. In order to understand the techniques of part two properly, you first have to understand why and when to use them. Summary. Addiction has two components. Gratification, in other words, getting something that hooks you, and anticipation, waiting for more gratification. The addiction formula borrows heavily from storytelling to hook the listener and keep them invested. This happens on another level than merely singing about a story, which is why I refer to it as lyricless storytelling. Lyricless storytelling is only one of the three pillars of a hit song. The other two are grooves and hooks. Energy, the governing principle. You may have heard the saying, music is universal. While I do not believe that to be true, I remember my grandma calling Bryan Adams just noise, there's one element all popular styles do seem to have in common. This element is distribution of energy. Don't worry, I'm not going to go all woo-woo on you and tell you that your couch should face your fireplace or that the stars need to align for you to write a hit song. What I mean is how the energy level of a song rises and falls. The moments of highest energy, typically choruses, we already know as gratification. Moments of lower energy, verses, we know as anticipation. As a professional songwriter, you have to be able to control energy with ease and precision. You have to know when to increase or decrease it, and you know just how much and how to do it. The easiest and most effective way to visualize energy is by using the energy curve model. This simple tool will help you tremendously when writing songs. Now, since this is an audiobook, explaining what a curve looks like is a little less direct than simply showing you. But again, all the graphs are on holisticsongwriting.com/addiction audio for you to check out later. Let's take Rather Be by Clean Bandits featuring Jess Glynn. The energy curve to this song would show you how the energy is distributed throughout the song. You can tell at a glance that the song is most intense during its last hook and that its lowest point of energy is during the intro and the primary bridge. So far, so good. Let's take a look at the elements an energy curve consists of. Most people argue that energy is made up of tension and release. Unfortunately, these terms don't make much sense to me anymore in this day and age. While they might help analyzing Stravinsky, they seem a little unfitting to describe everything that is going on in a song of the 21st century. So let's fine-tune the terms to reflect a more modern approach on songwriting. Tension is fine, and we will use the term in this book, although I do have a couple of adjustments to make to the definition, which we will get to. The word release is problematic. It implies letting go, which will lead your audience to drift away in their thoughts. This is not the goal of the addiction formula, where we want to keep the listener closely connected to the song. Instead, I suggest using the words tension and hype. Hype describes a relative energy level. In the energy curve, hype looks like the silhouette of New York, where the highest skyscrapers form the energy peaks. In other words, in hype, all the lines are either horizontal, to mark the energy levels, or vertical, where we jump to a different level. It can only be altered abruptly, not gradually. It usually jolts up or down every 4 or 8 bars. Typically, it's the highest in the chorus and the lowest in the intro. If your song was a car, hype would be your gears. Here's the elements that have the biggest influence on hype. Arrangement. If you add more instruments, hype increases. Part writing. Let an instrument play louder, and hype will go up as well. And lastly, rhythm, where slow sections are lower in hype. Next, let's get to tension and the way we are going to use it in this audiobook. If there was no tension, hype and energy would be the same thing. However, when we are in a part of the song with low hype, we still want our audience to know that this is only temporary and that we will get bigger soon. By increasing tension, we let them know that we are approaching a moment of gratification. And while the lines for hype are all horizontal, tension lines go up on an angle and then straight down when a new section begins. In other words, an energy curve that only consists of tension looks like a saw. So tension is gradual by nature. The longer a section goes on, the higher the tension gets. And to come back to a previous metaphor, if hype was your gears, tension would be your gas pedal. The elements that have the biggest influence on tension are harmony, where you could end on a 5 chord. This is tension in its traditional definition. Part writing, where you would slowly open up a hi-hat over the course of a section. Rhythm, where in order to add tension you would increase the number of notes played. And production. Here, you could slowly open up a filter. To get the finished energy curve, simply add tension to hype. This will create a curve where the tension smooths out the blockiness of the hype curve. So tension adds little slanted roofs to the New York City skyline. In a good energy curve, the only horizontal lines are in the choruses, where we don't need any tension because we've already arrived at our moment of gratification. The only vertical lines we see occur when we go down in energy. There is a third, more complex element that you can use to modify your energy curve, which we will get to in part two of this book. For now, I want you to focus on hype and tension. Make sure you really understand these before you continue, as we will get back to them time and time again in this audiobook. So one more time so you can write it down. Hype is relative energy. Think blocky New York City skyline. It's always stationary and only changes when a new section of your song begins. Tension is gradual. It's the slanted roofs on top of the skyline. This is the kind of energy that's going somewhere. So hype, stationary, tension, moving forward. Clear? And there you have it. Your governing principle, your boss. This curve will control all the elements of your song. The quality of arrangement, harmony, rhythm, part writing, lyrics, and production all depend on getting this curve just right. If your audience could draw your energy curve just from listening to your track, you've done a good job. If the energy curve is an effective one to begin with, in other words, one that follows the rules of the addiction formula, you might even have a hit on your hands. In the next chapter, we will talk about how to create your own energy curve so you can start experimenting. A quick note on levels. All the values described above, energy, hype, and tension, are relative. Looking at a curve will give you no clue about what kind of song you are hearing. It could be Celine Dion or Motorhead. The graphs are drawn to fit the song's most extreme energy levels. This means that the values also cannot tell you how dynamic your song is. The difference between minimum and maximum energy can range from barely noticeable, such as in Robin Thicke's Blurred Lines, to dramatic, as in Miley Cyrus's Wrecking Ball. Summary. Energy is made up of tension and hype. Hype is static and changes abruptly with each section of a song. Tension is dynamic and changes gradually. It is used to smooth out the blocky hype curve. The perfect energy curve. Let's go for a ride. In this chapter, we will talk about how you can design your own energy curve. I will give you the do's and don'ts and a step-by-step guide to creating your curve. Step 1. Determine the amount of your big moments. First, decide for a number of energy peaks. 3 is always a good start. It has its roots in the 3 movements of the sonata form and is by far the most popular. 2 or 4 is also possible. Note. These numbers don't count repetitions, so if the last chorus is repeated, it doesn't change the fact that it is still 1 energy peak. Step 2. Placement. Next, you have to decide where to put the energy peaks and troughs. What it really comes down to is balancing repetition and change. Have too much repetition and your song will turn out boring. Too much change and it will be convoluted. You're heading for that sweet spot of interesting and memorable, where repetition and change are perfectly balanced. Here are some examples. If you have 3 energy peaks, you could go for chorus, verse, chorus, verse, chorus, as Linkin Park did in Crawling, or the much more typical verse, chorus, verse, chorus, primary bridge, chorus, which you might know from Sam Smith's Stay With Me. 2 energy peaks go for verse, chorus, verse, chorus, like Mr. Probs with Waves. With 4 choruses, you might want to start out your song with the chorus like Iggy Azalea in Change Your Life, or you simply add another bridge. Verse, chorus, verse, chorus, primary bridge, chorus, primary bridge, chorus. This can be heard in Pharrell's Happy. If you want to build a curve from scratch, here are 3 tips to help you get creative. 1. End big. You probably want a nice climax at the end of your song, so putting a chorus there is usually a good decision. However, ending on a bridge-like section can also be very effective if you want to suggest an open ending. Justin Timberlake does this in What Goes Around. This is a pretty mean way of ending a song because you're not giving your audience the gratification they want. but it also just might be the reason they want to hit that replay button. 2. Up, up, up. One of the things I see done wrong most of the time in songwriting is the second verse. This is due to the fact that many writers forget the simple fact that anything too predictable is boring. Think back to your latest addiction. For me, it was Bob Ross's Joy of Painting. I was really into it when I started. I learned a lot. I had a great time and couldn't get enough of it. But after a while, I kept seeing the same techniques over and over again, and my excitement faded. Each episode felt the same. This is equally true in music. Repeat and you will lose your audience. Make sure you give your song direction by changing small things here and there, preferably getting bigger as the song progresses. This is especially important when writing the second verse. Make sure you don't just repeat verse one. This is one of the most common mistakes songwriters make. If we imagine for a second that verses could talk, here's what they would sound like. First of all, bad technique, where the second verse has the same hype level as the first. And we're back to this again. Good technique, where the second verse is higher in hype than the first verse. But wait, there's more. And then there's great technique, where we have a higher hype level and some tension sprinkled on top. And so make sure that the overall energy level throughout your song goes up. The only exception to this is using implied tension, which we will cover later. The most gratifying songs are those that put their biggest moments at the end, with the rest of the song building up to it. 3. The golden mean, or the 1-2-3 rule. Following this ratio when structuring your songs usually leads to pleasing results. Some Christians see this number, a little less than 2/3, as proof of intelligent design, which has also led to the name divine proportion. And indeed, there are countless examples to be found in nature for this ratio, such as the human heartbeat, the amount of petals on pine cones, flower petals, seed heads, even the human face, DNA molecules, and spiral galaxies. Whether woo-woo or not, the ratio has found its way into aesthetics. The Pantheon in Rome is designed following the proportion, just like the Mona Lisa, the Statue of David, the logos for Apple, Toyota, Pepsi, etc. The golden mean has become a representative for beauty. We can find the ratio in music as well. For example, the form of Debussy's La Mer corresponds exactly to the golden mean, as do most of the works by Béla Bartók. There is much discussion about this phenomenon, as there is no evidence that any of the composers consciously sought out to use the ratio in their compositions, but whether they did or not, the ratio is there. I don't expect you to believe this whole divine proportion story, although it's a fascinating topic, don't you think? So here is a more psychological way of thinking about it. Have you ever heard about the rule of three? It says that all good things come in threes. By repeating something once, you create the expectation of a pattern. The audience is conditioned to believe that they will hear the same thing a third time. But instead, you surprise them with a completely new situation. It's exactly the same kind of principles that makes all those jokes work. A priest and a rabbi walk into a bar. The minister ducked. You pretend to set up a pattern and then break with it. So let's look at today's songwriting and see how the golden mean is represented in standard song form. Most pop songs start with a verse, 1, followed with a verse continued, 2, and then change to a pre-chorus, 3. Introduce, repeat, change. In the second half of the song, we introduce a bridge, 1, repeat the bridge, 2, and then change with a chorus, 3. The whole song can also be seen in this way. We introduce a verse and chorus, 1, we repeat the verse and chorus, 2, and change for the bridge, 3. Also, many songs use a pre-chorus that's similar to the verses, if only musically. So we introduce a verse, 1, repeat in the pre-chorus, 2, and change with the chorus, 3. As you can see, there seems to be an unwritten rule about how many times you can repeat a section before something new has to happen. For you, this just means that if you're making up your own energy curve, build in this 1-2-3 rule as much as you can, as it strikes a perfect balance between repetition and change. 1, introduce, 2, repeat, and 3, change. Step 3, smooth out the build-ups. This is the step that most people are not aware of, but it is absolutely crucial for writing a great song. It has to do with anticipation. If we are not looking forward to the chorus musically, then why would our audience? So for this, we will zoom in a little on our energy curve and just look at one buildup. For example, a buildup might start with an intro, which is the first energy trough, and build up to the first chorus, which is our peak. This step is about slowly building up the energy. Note this common mistake. It doesn't matter if you write something different. If your energy levels don't change, your audience will get bored very quickly. There are three ways to increase anticipation. By increasing the hype levels every 4 or 8 bars, by using tension, or by combining the two. 1. Increase of hype levels. Visually, think of this as the left half of a winner's podium. Using hype exclusively in a build-up is the most basic way of creating anticipation. Since the energy is going up and up and up, we get a feeling of direction towards the next energy peak rather than remaining where we are. Using only hype to create anticipation can sound a little jumpy because there's nothing that leads into the following 4 or 8 bars, so it isn't widely used. However, in the right context, it can be used creatively to create a chaotic or surprising effect. 2. Using only tension. On our energy curve, this looks like a shark's fin. We're starting low and smoothly build up to our chorus. This is the superior way of reaching an energy peak because it has more direction than just using hype levels. This technique makes your energy peak stand out much more by introducing a certain aura of mystery that the others don't have. However, in the real world, there are not a lot of songs using only tension to reach an energy peak. 3. Combining hype and tension. This is the most commonly used type of raising the energy level over a period of multiple sections. It has a great sense of direction, is straightforward, and everyone will get it. Knowing how to control both hype and tension, therefore, is key to writing commercially successful songs. Literally anything in the charts uses this approach. Step 4. Smooth out the transitions. Now that we've looked at an entire buildup, let's zoom in even further and look at how the energy level can change from one section to the next. So for example, how we could go from pre-chorus to chorus. You can find examples for all of these on the website. 1. Jump. Visual. Stairs going up. Definition. Increasing hype levels stepwise. Best case scenario, unexpected, in your face. Worst case scenario, chaotic, confusing, show-offy, irritating, draws attention to the arrangement. Notes. This is a move that is often seen when going from verse to verse continued, or from primary bridge to primary bridge continued. It's the easiest of all transitions to use, and when used subtly, it is a great addition to your set of tools. Listen to what this sounds like. Two, smooth, visual, ramp going up. Definition, using hype and tension to increase energy. Best case scenario, exciting, anticipating, beautiful. Worst case scenario, predictable. Notes, this is the most popular transition in hit songs, and you come across it literally everywhere. It has a great sense of direction and sounds very pleasing in any scenario. Listen to what this sounds like. Three, drop, visual, stairs going down. Definition, decreasing the hype level stepwise. Best case scenario, fascinating, surprising, suspenseful. Worst case scenario, disappointing, confusing, boring. Notes, this is the typical transition from chorus back to verse. Making this move work can be tricky because you can easily lose some listeners with it. Using tension, or implied tension, which we will get to in part 2, right after a drop, will usually save your ass. Listen to what this sounds like. Three, 4. Surprise. Definition: building tension, then dropping to a lower hype level. Best case scenario: very emotional, gripping, exciting, brutal. Worst case scenario: disappointing, confusing, boring. Notes: this is more of an effect, which can be very useful when transitioning from chorus to verse or primary bridge. It feels like you are sucking the air out of the room. Note that you're running into the same problems as with a regular drop. Listen to what this sounds like. Five, overshoot. Visual: upper half of a thick arrow pointing left. Okay, these are getting really ridiculous. Definition: building more tension than necessary to reach a higher hype level. Best case scenario: implying underlying turmoil. Worst case scenario: disappointing, confusing, boring. Notes: don't ever use it. Pretending to go somewhere and then not doing it is effectively telling your listeners that they've waited all this time for nothing. Listen to what this sounds like. Six, false promise. Definition: building tension but coming back to the same hype level. Best case scenario: fascinating, weird in a good way, implying tension that isn't there. Worst case scenario: very disappointing, boring, confusing, draws attention to the arrangement. Notes: even more dangerous than overshooting. Use at extreme caution or you will burn yourself. Always follow by using implied tension. And don't wait too long with your moment of gratification or you will piss off your audience. Listen to what this sounds like. Seven, flatline. Visual, flat line. Duh. Definition: not changing anything. Best case scenario: your groove, vocals, or lyrics are so good that you don't need to change. Worst case scenario: your audience dies of boredom. Notes: this is also a tricky one. If you have a really great drum groove, this can work, but be careful. When in doubt, always go up. Listen to what this sounds like. Eight, lift. Definition: building less tension than necessary to transition to a higher hype level. Best case scenario: great direction, moving, huge. Worst case scenario: chaotic, confusing, show-offy, irritating, draws attention to the arrangement. Notes: if you like writing big, impressive choruses, then from now on this is your go-to move for transitioning into them. It packs more of a punch than a smooth transition, clearly establishes the chorus, and has great direction. Listen to what this sounds like. Nine, negative tension. Visual, ramp going down. Definition: gradually decreasing the energy to reach a lower hype level. Best case scenario: smooth, beautiful. Worst case scenario: confusion, disorientation. Notes: I'm listing this transition merely for completion's sake here, as it isn't widely used. Negative tension can be achieved by using downlifters, certain kinds of drum fills, or stripping out instruments in the middle of a section. Listen to what this sounds like.